You are now listening to Well-Fed Women, the show that's been radically changing the way women perceive health, fitness, and their bodies since 2015. I'm your host, Noelle Tarr. Submit your questions to wellfedwomen@gmail.com, and you can keep up with the show on Instagram at wellfedwomen. Welcome to the Well-Fed Women podcast. This is episode number 305. I am your host, Noelle Tarr of coconutsandkettlebells.com. I'm a nutritional therapy practitioner and a certified personal trainer. Happy New Year. We made it. It's officially 2021. I'm very excited about that. I hope you are too, if you're listening to this live. This is our third and final bonus episode while I take a holiday break. I am really excited about this interview with Steph Prangley. She and I are going to be talking about adrenal fatigue triggers and recovery. She has a very insightful and just really inspiring story about her own journey with just stress and adrenal fatigue and a very intense job, and what she did to manage that situation and manage her adrenal fatigue and ultimately heal. And also, you know, what did healing look like, and what did it look like to actually finally get back into activity again? So what does it look like now to eat and to move, being recovered from adrenal issues? So I know a lot of you have questions about how to deal with kind of these heavier, like when you have gone through these really heavy periods of stress and you're going through adrenal dysfunction and your body isn't responding well to that. How do you dig out yourself out of that hole? But then how do you live and thrive and make the appropriate changes so that you don't have those issues happen again? So that's what this episode is. Steph has so many great little nuggets. I really love this interview, and I love just the knowledge bombs that she drops, and it's just so many great lessons and experiences. And of course, it's just a good conversation where we also have our own little rants about things and life. And so I'm really excited to introduce this episode to you and have this so that you can have this as a resource. Before we dive in, I want to thank Element, who is a new sponsor, a new supporter of this podcast, which I have been looking for a company like them for such a long time, especially with my experience as an endurance athlete. I have been using electrolyte supplements for a long time, and I find that my health improves a lot. My performance improves too, just with exercise, because I have a healthy sweat rate. So I'm always looking for ways to replenish electrolytes. And this is the first company that I have found that provides clean electrolyte supplementation. So most of you know, we talk a lot about hydration and specifically how electrolytes are an important aspect of hydration that so many people overlook. Electrolytes are crucial minerals that conduct electrical charges in your body, and every message sent through your nervous system, including your brain, involves electrical transmissions or nerve impulses, and you need electrolytes for these nerve impulses to fire. The problem is you lose electrolytes through your sweat and through going to the bathroom, and they have to be replaced through diet and supplementation. And that need increases significantly if you're exercising regularly and sweating, or if you have a job where you move a lot and you sweat. Or if you're following a whole foods diet, which I think this is a big thing that a lot of people don't really realize. But if you're following a whole foods diet, you're not really exposed to a lot of sodium, which is a really important electrolyte. So when training, especially fasted, electrolytes are critical for performance. Many athletes feel dehydrated and they'll drink more water. However, this can dilute blood sodium levels even further, and it shows up as muscle cramps, headache, fatigue, and sleep disturbances. And electrolytes play a key role in hormone regulation. I've done a lot of research about this, and it's very interesting. Low sodium levels actually spike adrenal hormones like cortisol. I have had my own homemade electrolyte drink for years that I use during both labors. Labor aid is crucial. And anytime the kids are sick or we're playing hard outside and sweating, or when I'm exercising. And so I'm so happy that now there are grab-and-go packets from Element. They make these recharge packets. You can just open it up, mix it up with water and sip, and there's absolutely no sugar, gluten fillers, artificial ingredients, and it is paleo-friendly. Element's co-founder is actually Rob Wolf, who we interviewed on episode number 120, so you know those ingredients are solid and they've been well-researched and developed. To grab some packets, go to drinklmnt.com/wellfed. You will get free shipping on all orders. There's also a money-back guarantee, so if you don't like it, you can just send it back. Customer service is awesome. They'll take care of you. Again, it's drinklmnt. Drink Element. drinklmnt.com/wellfed. Grab yourself some packets to have on hand. And now, let me bring on Steph.
Hi, Noelle. Thank you for having me.
Oh, of course. Thank you for coming on and sharing your story. I'm really excited to talk to you more. I feel like adrenal fatigue, in quotations, is one of those things that most people experience symptoms of, and or it's the catalyst for a lot of other things going on, but yet they don't really know what's happening, or they don't get a diagnosis, or they just are sent down the wrong path. So I think that this is going to be super insightful, and it's a topic that we've never covered before. So I would love for you to set the stage for us, because I think this is going to be super insightful and a lot of people are going to hear themselves in your story. But what were you like? Maybe just give us some insight into what was life like for you growing up? What were your influences? Maybe how your personality formed? And then we'll get into a little bit about how you started to notice symptoms of adrenal fatigue.
Yeah. So as a kid, I would say I had a pretty average life, but my parents did put some pressure on me and my sister to get good grades. And I think it all kind of started there. And I was a good student, and but I thought, you know, if good grades are good, then perfect grades might be better. And that's just what I remember from being a kid. I would come home crying because I thought I would, quote, fail an exam, when really I just didn't get 100%. And I know.
You were that kid.
I was that kid. Yeah, front row, front and center, raising their hand. Yeah, that was me. No one liked me.
I already have a question. Do you think that your parents kind of pushed you? Do you think that was part of your personality to begin with? Maybe you're a lot like your parents. And so, you know, some of those genetics and tendencies were passed on mm-hmm. to you? Or do you think that was more it reinforced and pushed on you, like perfection is the way to go, like anything less than that is unacceptable?
I don't think they pushed perfectionism on me, but that's how I interpreted it. So my dad he was born and raised in a blue collar family, and he was the first person to in his family, extended family, everything to graduate college. And he had a lot of pride in that, but he saw it as like a way out and a better life for his children. And I think that came through with him being a little bit strict on me and my sister. And, you know, my sister was also a good student and a good athlete, and I felt like I had to compete for attention with her, maybe. And for the record, like, I don't think any of this was true. I think this is how my underdeveloped brain saw it. So I thought, oh, like, I'm so much more lovable. I get all this great attention when I bring home this great report card. So I don't know, maybe a little bit of both.
Yeah. That's what I was trying to, you know, explore more is it real? How do all these things play into our development of, you know, becoming type A and becoming perfectionist? Like, you know, and I think it's a lot of different things. It's a lot of different things. So, yeah. Tell me a little bit more about maybe how you were in high school and college, and how some of those, because I believe that, you know, some of these tendencies tend to come out more in our higher education. So talk to me a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So high school was kind of the same. I didn't think it was that difficult. I was in AP classes and stuff like that. And I think I became a little bit more relaxed around the grade 100% situation, but I was also a high performing athlete. So I played volleyball competitively and basketball, and I was eventually recruited to play college volleyball. And that's where the body image stuff came in. And I never really thought about my body until being on a volleyball scholarship in college. We had weekly weigh-ins, and I
for volleyball
was always told
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
Every week I was told to lose 5 pounds, and I'm like, from where? Like, you've seen volleyball players, we're all like giants.
Right.
And kind of lean. So like the weekly weigh-ins, and then I saw like other girls like pinching skin on their stomachs and measuring out their food. And then that kind of planted the seed for like, oh, okay, so now I have to get good grades and have a body that's 5 pounds less than it is, whatever that means.
How did you go about, how'd you go about doing that? So now you have this expectation. What were some of the things that you did?
I didn't work out hard or anything. I mean, it was like practice and weightlifting and conditioning. Like, you couldn't do anything else. I did start measuring out my food a little bit. Like, we had some kind of loose macro recommendations from our assistant coach. And I don't think I really paid that much attention to it. I just sort of dealt with like the mental toll it took, you know, saying you had to lose 5 pounds, but that definitely planted the seed for later in life. And honestly, I only made it 2 years in college volleyball because I kept getting injured. Like, I'm sure I was malnourished, or my body just wasn't really cut out for that kind of wear and tear.
Did you start to notice any symptoms of, like, now knowing what you know, did you notice any symptoms of adrenal fatigue in college, like when you were working out really hard and probably now eating less?
Yeah, definitely. I was getting sick a lot, and my grades fell. Like, I was still this perfectionist student, but I got like a D in a class. Just unheard of. I didn't have the energy to study. I'd have to just kind of lay in bed all weekend. I got mono. I would get like bronchitis a couple times a year, tonsillitis. So that, I mean, there were early warning signs. And then the stress fractures in my back. I mean, the stress everywhere.
Wow. You had stress fractures in your back at a young age.
Yeah, that's why I had to. Yeah, I was like 19 years old, and the doctor I went to was like, oh my God, your back's like a 60-year-old back. And right then and there, my dad was like, no, well, like, scholarship money isn't worth it. They made me quit.
Did anybody talk to you then, like, hey, this isn't normal, or hey, this is like, obviously, your dad, you know, stepped in, and that's important. But was there anybody else that was like, hey, you might be pushing yourself a little bit too hard, or hey, like, did anybody ever mention anything about the thyroid or the endocrine system or hormones or adrenal fatigue back then?
No, I went to college in 99. And you know, I mean, like, you're being paid to play volleyball. Like, you play through a sprained ankle and you're compared to everyone else on the team. So it's like, oh, hey, Steph, like, your grades are falling, but so-and-so over here is doing just fine. And she's not breaking her back or like grades decreasing or whatever. It was just like, you have to push through it.
Yeah. Talk to me about, you know, how eventually you started. I'm assuming that kind of carried on until you stopped putting up with it. When did you start to really figure out what was going on? And talk to me about some of the symptoms you started to experience and, like, really started to try to seek out help.
Well, I mean, I went probably almost a decade, you know. I think you're right, and it probably started in college, but I went down a really difficult career path. I'm my 9-to-5, I'm an actuary, and we have to take a lot of really, really difficult exams to become fully credentialed. And that requires like 20 plus hours a week of studying on top of working full time. I got back into competitive volleyball in my 20s, and then I was doing these hard gym sets. It's like I learned nothing from my injuries and all of that.
Been there, done that stuff. I know.
Oh my God. Yeah. Don't you want to just slap your younger self sometimes?
All the time. Yeah. Yes, I do.
So I kept doing like what I knew best, which was work really hard at work and like, you know, quote, be like perfect employee and try to get the perfect body and be perfect, all the things and whatever. In my early 30s, I took this when I was finished with all of my credentials. I took a promotion. I took a really big promotion in a new city. And so I had to relocate. And it's because I think you guys have talked about this before, but like when you say to yourself, I'll be happy when I achieve that goal. And for me, it was my credentials. Like I'll be happy when I'm done with these exams and I have my credentials. And you think, okay, great. Like I just have to suffer until then and then I'll be happy. It's like magic, right? Mm. And then when you finally get there, you're just kind of like, okay, now what? Like it's your new normal. It, you know, you realize how much you sacrificed for it and stuff, but I still tried to fill that void. So I took this promotion and it was just the definition of a toxic environment, just a corporate high stress, long hours. I was managing employees for the first time. And I just tried to like dial in food harder because that had worked for me in the past. Like I had done some Whole 30s and had some success with that. And despite you and Steph like kind of chirping in my ear that that's not all about that, I still was like, well, it worked for me before, blah, blah, blah. And then it all, I know.
I don't think anything is wrong with the Whole 30. I really don't. And I think it's the why. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's actually really, really insightful for people to like what they present it to be is exactly, you know, what you used it for initially. It's the problem where it's like we start to push the limit with it and be super restrictive and dive in further and like Whole 30, Whole 60, Whole 90 and think that it's like, you know, like you said, you have to go harder on the food, where a lot of times that's like taking you in the opposite direction of health that you need to go in. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not anti Whole 30, but I do think that, I mean, their book is It Starts With Food. That was the original one. And, mm-hmm. and that's true. Like it does. I mean, there is something to be said about, you know, eating nutrients and fueling your body and all of that. But the hardest stuff to examine is the big stuff like what we're talking about. Like, oh my God, this job is toxic. It's making me sick. What do I do?
Yeah. I just thought of.
So I mean,
they need to make a book that's called It Doesn't End With Food. I was just thinking in my head, I'm like, you know what? That sounds like a great next book. Sure, it starts with food, but it does not end with food. You know, there's so much more, which is your story. So you're in the toxic job and the food's not working. What was your next step?
So, I mean, I talked to my now husband about it and we decided I was just killing myself, like literally killing myself, crying in my office, couldn't sleep. So bloated. IBS was just like weight gain, all of the things. So we decided that I would transition to work from home full time and we would get out of the big city, move to the country. And so we started establishing a transition plan for that. And everything really came crashing down after I left the city and still worked from home full time, but left the being in the office. And it was like my body finally relaxed enough to to be like, oh, no, girl, like you're super sick. I couldn't finish sentences. I couldn't walk my dogs without having to take a nap. And we're not talking about like hikes in the mountains, like just a little potty break was exhausting. Showering, brushing my teeth, the brain fog and like the severe debilitating fatigue. I couldn't function. And I don't, I'm sorry, I'm getting like a little emotional about it because no one would ever believe me. I had gone to doctors before and all I heard was you're depressed, so here's an antidepressant and you need to lose weight.
Mm. Yeah, I hate that for you. Because
anyone who's experienced like that, what I'm talking about with like actual fatigue, it's so hard to explain to other people and it's so hard to go through because you start believing that like you're wrong, you know, like no one's really believing you when you tell them, and other people can't really, they're like, you're just a little tired or maybe you're getting sick. And it's like, you don't understand. I forgot the word to bathtub today.
Yeah, that's intense. Yeah, and it's hard because I feel like so many women in particular don't feel validated in their struggles. Like, there are very real hormonal shifts that can happen, especially, I mean, beyond the scope of adrenal dysfunction. And you can talk about a variety of symptoms, and you're written off constantly. Constantly women are written off. And it's just really frustrating. And I feel like the endocrine system in general is so misunderstood in terms of how it impacts your health in ways that you're discussing. Like, how on earth could brain fog be impacted by, you know, your hormones or your endocrine system? Like, you know, people don't connect those dots, especially if it's like, you know, a primary care doctor who's just used to writing prescriptions and doesn't dive deep into that kind of stuff. How much of your day is spent in front of a computer screen or looking at your phone or watching TV? All of those screens emit blue light, and studies show our constant exposure to blue light through electronic devices has a negative impact on our circadian rhythms, sleep, anxiety, headaches, and even eye strain. Blue Blocks was created to fix these problems and block out the blue light with evidence-backed high-quality lenses. I've become so passionate about light optimization recently and filtering out computer light and blue light entirely after the sun sets. I wasn't doing anything about this until about a year ago, and I was experiencing eye strain and weird migraines and also unexplained wired and tiredness, especially at night. And now I wear the Blue Blocks computer filter glasses anytime I'm looking at screens, and Blue Blocks sleep lenses at night, and I haven't experienced symptoms since. Blue Blocks was created because they saw the need for a product that was exactly in line with peer-reviewed academic literature, which I so appreciate. There are a lot of cheaply made lenses out there that don't actually block all of the blue and green light. Don't waste your money on that. Go to blueblocks.com/wellfed and use the code WELLFED, WELLFED, for 15% off. Their frames are gorgeous. It's a health investment that everybody needs to be considering, especially given the recent shifts to people working more from home in front of the computer all day. They can also turn almost any pair of glasses into custom blue blockers. They simply take your existing glasses and fit them with their lenses. Again, that's Blue Blocks. That's blueblocks.com/wellfed and use the code WELLFED for 15% off and free shipping worldwide. So you're kind of at the end of your rope. When did you start to learn about or think, okay, this might be adrenal fatigue? When did you get a diagnosis that you felt like, this is it, this is what I'm experiencing?
That was like 2 Februarys ago. So just over a year ago, I finally just was frustrated and found a functional medicine doctor like about an hour away from where we lived. And he believed me, and honestly, that alone was a huge weight. But we did all of the tests. I had like SIBO, adrenal fatigue, and just like generalized IBS or whatever. And it was just all kind of stemmed into stress. And, you know, I think it's extremely short-sighted to minimize the impact that stress has on all of these functions, because I probably would have been digesting food if I wasn't chronically stressed, and I wouldn't maybe have the SIBO and the IBS and all of the bloating and all of the inflammation and all of that stuff. So, like, why aren't people really talking about that?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Steph, I'm trying. So, I'm trying. Okay. Yeah.
Yes, you're fighting the good fight, but it's an uphill battle, like, you know?
Yeah, it really is. I want to know more about the testing before you jump into the resolutions. Like, so you said you had your adrenals tested. What was it? Did you do like a cortisol salivary test? And then did you do a SIBO breath test?
Yes, I did both of those things.
Okay. Okay, and both came back. So what did your cortisol test say?
I don't remember offhand.
But your functional medicine doc said, did you have really low cortisol, like, you know, throughout the day, or what, you know, what was kind of the did he give you the diagnosis of like your adrenals are dysfunctional?
Oh. Yes, low cortisol throughout the day.
Got it.
Yeah, like I basically had nothing left. Mm. And then SIBO was both hydrogen and methane. Wait, are those the right ones?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So
you get this information. Was it like relief to you to hear that?
It was a relief, and then I realized that I needed way more help than I thought I needed. Like, it was the first time I really surrendered to the fact that I can't do it all. I mean, my body had been screaming at me for at least a decade that you can't keep living like this. But that was a big wake up call. And I actually made the decision to take a leave of absence from work because I realized I wouldn't be able to heal while trying to do this high stress job, even though it was from home. You know, if you get the right combination of company and manager, they can make it just as stressful for you at home. So,
yeah. So what was some of the things that you did for your healing? What did your, you know, healing journey over the past year, what did that look like?
Lots of sleep, cut out coffee. And I would say I went on like a pretty restrictive diet. It's probably similar to Whole30. But I wouldn't care about when I was eating or anything like that. And it was just really sleep. My husband took care of pretty much everything, like cooking, cleaning, taking care of our animals. And, you know, as a former competitive athlete, going to lay on the couch all day for months, it's a pretty hard pill to swallow. But yeah, I mean, I just, a lot of it was mindset work, Noelle. Like I just started being accepting of where my body was and saying like, okay, you're not going to heal 10 plus years of chronic stress in a week or a month or whatever. And, you know, I started to feel a little bit better, and then I might do a little bit too much that day. And I'm like, okay, that's too much. I'm going to dial it back. And so really getting in tune with that and checking in with my body and saying like, what do you feel like today? Like, do you want to just watch some Netflix and eat mashed potatoes and ghee? Like, that's cool. So, yeah, and he gave me like a supplement regimen and stuff like that. I mean, I was on a ton because we were trying to do like SIBO and adrenals, and then there's like the digestive distress on top of that and all that.
Yeah, were you doing, do you remember any of the supplements that you were on for adrenal fatigue? Were you doing adaptogens, or was it more just like nutrients?
Yeah. Yeah, I had an adaptogen that I think was specific to adrenal fatigue, where it included like vitamins and stuff like that would also help support that.
Yeah. And then the SIBO, I'm assuming after you did, you know, I think with SIBO, you do like an antimicrobial or some sort of treatment that treats just the overgrowth, right? So it's not like an antibiotic, but it's very specific to the overgrowth. But you had both, which is, that's even more complicated. So after you did all this stuff, were you retesting with your functional medicine practitioner? And how many times have you retested, or have you?
I have not retested. I think if I'm honest, I got tired of trying. I was, you know, on this path that I felt pretty good about. I just couldn't bring myself to do one more appointment or one more thing. And like the saliva test and the breath test, they really stink. Like they are not fun to do.
And I know. They're really, they're pretty brutal. It's a lot. And you have to be really on top of it and like set your timer. And yeah, I know.
Yeah. So I just sort of started gauging my own symptoms. And I mean, I know this is probably not the best advice to give, but I was so triggered by any stressful event. Like going to the grocery store was too stressful for me. I couldn't do it. Like the noise and the people and driving there, I couldn't handle it. I mean, that's how tapped out I was. Basically, any kind of input that wasn't my immediate house was too much for me to handle. And so, I mean, I made the decision that it would be better for my mental health to just not go to the doctor. And I told myself, you know, you can always go back and if you start flaring up again or whatever. So
what is your path to like trying to get back to normalcy been like? Because I think the struggle for people is like once they heal, I mean, with anything really, it's like, you know, you have a chronic issue or chronic pain or, you know, with you, you have adrenal fatigue and you know, X, Y, and Z issue that have stemmed from that. How have you kind of approached trying to get back into things? Have you gone back to work yet? And how do you know, I mean, have you tried to work out again? And also, well, I'll ask you about your mental health in a second, but like, what is it that you do now to try to like, what are the things that happen that you say, okay, I overdid it, I need to take a step back? And what are the signs that maybe you're looking for to say, okay, I can take the next step forward?
Yeah, good question. Well, I mean, I quit that toxic job finally and found a new one, and that was pretty paramount. I took another demotion, another pay cut, because I just wanted less responsibility. So that was a big thing. And then in terms of activity and stuff like that, I worked really hard on tapping into my body's intuition, you know, while I was on disability last year around this time and since then. But I can just kind of feel like, hey, I want to start moving. And this has been new in the past couple months. So, you know, I just started with walking. And I would walk on my lunch break, maybe walk a half hour. And if that felt good, then that felt good. And I'd do some stretches. And then the next day I would kind of check in again because it's good to get away from the computer and get outside and do that kind of stuff. And now I just slowly built on that. You know, I went, instead of walking flat paths, I might walk more hills. And then I might I moved up to hiking once a week until everything closed down. And then, yeah, I would say like walking and stretching. And then now I'm just starting to like the back of my brain's like, hey, you want to get your bicycle out soon and ride it? Because it's been like 5 years. I don't know. I have to encourage people to really tap into that intuition because it takes a long time to get there. And it's what you talk about with food and taking a more intuitive eating approach where it's like, okay, you might eat all the ice cream at first, but then you get tired of it and you just gotta kind of trust your body. But yeah, I mean, I have pushed it a little too far and I have spent days on the couch and I'll just nap and I don't judge myself for it. It's just kind of a data point for me to take away for the next day. And then I bounce back really quickly. But, you know, for me, it took working from home, a couple of different demotions, like demoting myself to a lower level, living on a 25-acre property, like kind of out in the middle of nowhere, and really readjusting my priorities, like working on building up stress resilience, like the size of your stress bucket, so to speak, but like removing pretty much everything that was inside of that stress bucket. And then you slowly start adding something in, even the good stressors, like going out and socializing or going on vacation. Like traveling used to be super triggering for me. And yeah, and then you just kind of pay attention to it.
I love that analogy. I think that's really helpful. One of the things that I'm thinking about in my head is you've obviously talked about how you're a go-getter, and you know, you're a perfectionist. How have you had to manage that in your head mentally? Because I assume that every day that you wake up and you have to say, okay, you have to lay on the couch, that's almost draining too, in a way. Even though you're doing nothing, it's still mentally draining. So how have you been able to kind of process this mindset shift and also like changing the way that you perceive where your worth lies and you know, how valuable you are to society, throughout all of this?
That took therapy. I did a lot of work on tapping into some of the childhood stuff that made me feel like I needed to earn love, and my thoughts that I needed to have the perfect body or just be perfect in general, overarching statement to be lovable. I did a lot of like gratitude and affirmation kind of journaling. And honestly, marrying my husband helped too, because he is not a go-getter, which is perfect. He helps remind me that not everything that you want to do needs to be done right now. And, you know, he was one of the first relationships that I felt like I didn't need to earn his love. And then that, you know, slowly built some confidence in myself that, yeah, like I'm enough as I am. But that, I mean, that piece really took some therapy. And, you know, there's still some of that in there. Like I like to be busy and I like to learn and, you know, always kind of work to improve myself in some way. But after being on disability, like that's really humbling too, as someone who historically prided herself on being so high achieving. Mm-hmm. I had to work through that. You know, I worked through that on disability quite a bit, where it's like, well, my value isn't tied up in this job. And as soon as I realized that, like I still had something to offer the world, even though I wasn't working, it just kind of trickled downstream from there. Well, maybe that means that I don't have to have a perfect body in order to be lovable and contribute to the world. And maybe it means that this stuff that happened in childhood, my little brain just manifested in the wrong way. And, you know, that was a big part of the healing. Like I couldn't have done it without that, because I think I always would have put all of this pressure on myself to continue to try to earn that. And like your podcast and other like similar podcasts have helped a lot too. Y'all are doing a good job out there.
Yeah, I think it's a whole different way of seeing the world and seeing, because one of the things that gets really hard is that as you integrate yourself back into society, you see all the messages that you once saw, and it doesn't really go away. I mean, you know, in our country and especially, it's your worth lies in your output and your how much effort and how much you know how valuable you are in society is like you know, how little did you eat? How much did you work out? And, are you, you know, sleep when you're dead? You sleep little and you work a lot and you produce. And we praise, you know, people who are entrepreneurs and working themselves to the bone. And, you know, oh, we love those stories. And of course I do too. Like, I like hearing that. But at the same time, like, what are people sacrificing when they go through that? And we don't always see the true behind the curtain on those how I built this stories, which is failed relationships and days in bed and sicknesses and autoimmune diseases and all that kind of stuff. And so it's almost like when you get a life lesson like that, where you realize, like, oh, my worth isn't in that, and that's cool. You get to operate in a completely different way, and you get to kind of see you get to see behind the curtain, and you know you don't kind of fall. Like, you don't fall for it anymore. Like, we talk about diet culture and, you know, the tricks that they use to market their products and make you think that you need it, right? Like, oh, well, that something's wrong with my body. Like, oh, cellulite's bad. I need that. Right. And so, like, in the same way, you can kind of see that in how society operates and how we're supposed to achieve. And so it's kind of nice when you get to, like, have a different perspective and carry that with you throughout your life so that you can be healthier long term. And hopefully, you know, you can move past this phase and enjoy life more and not keep being weighed down with, like, reoccurring adrenal fatigue, which I think a lot of people are experiencing. You know, I think a lot of people, like, oh, I gotta, they do the things and then they kind of feel better and then they try to jump right back into it. And then they experience it again. And so it's nice to kind of finally get off that roller coaster. And mindset has to be a part of that. If you do not do the mindset work, you will not heal. And so I'm glad to hear that you worked through all of that stuff and got that new realization. I also have a personal question for you. What number are you on the Enneagram? Do you know?
Yes, I am a one.
Oh, of course you are. I was like, is she a one or a three? Yeah. But one makes more sense. So yeah, that makes sense. And I don't know if you've thought about this anymore, Steph, but I've really been thinking, like, wouldn't it be interesting to dive into the health challenges of each personality type? obviously ones are probably going to experience adrenal fatigue a little bit more, and they're going to, you know, all the things that come with a perfectionist sort of mentality. There's definitely going to be, they're going to be more susceptible to certain health challenges than, let's say, like, somebody who is not a perfectionist, but is a people pleaser. You know what I mean? So anyway, things I think about. I'm like, somebody needs to write a book on that. Maybe it's already been done and nobody cares, but to me, that's super interesting to think about. Okay. Thank you so much for sharing all of your stuff. Is there anything else that you want to add?
Yeah, I'll just say one more thing. Kind of, you were talking about the diet culture thing and how we're faced with that in the world. And when you kind of recover from adrenal fatigue and try to re-enter the world, you know, a lot of people are susceptible to going right back to it. And I did just want to mention that I had, like, a trigger for me, something that put everything in perspective, was that I was in the hospital room when my husband's father died. And he was on hospice for like 7 or 10 days or something like that. And I was watching these people cycle in and out and fly in from all over the country and all of this love and support. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, if I were in that bed, I don't know who would come visit me because all I do is work. Mm. And so that was like, for people who don't have a trigger or like a event like that really changes everything for them, you know, really evaluate if you're living in a way that's aligned with what you say you value. Because I would always say that people were really important to me, but I wasn't living in a way where that was true. And I think you can really start to heal that way, but you might have to make some tough decisions. And that's the hard part, you know? Food is easy. Taking a couple months off is easy. But then reassimilating in the world can, you know, you really have to make some decisions with that and do some deep interpersonal work on it.
Yeah, I love that insight. Thank you, Steph. Thank you for sharing your story. And where, I mean, are you public on Instagram? If somebody wants to get in touch with you, maybe just to kind of connect and ask you a question or learn more about your story, where can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram at Infinity Hill Nutrition. So I'm actually wrapping up my NTP right now because God forbid I don't study for a hot minute. But yeah, everything Infinity Hill Nutrition.
Okay, I'm looking you up right now. And yay, thank you so much, Steph. I appreciate you sharing everything.
Thanks, Noelle. Take care.